into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites. The Paddy Power Half Hour on OTB Sports. Minimal contact in stadiums. That shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Bang on 1:30 this Friday afternoon. You're welcome along to the Paddy Power Half Hour. It is Ger Gilroy and end a call with you every Friday afternoon. And joining us from Paddy Power, their odds compiler this week is Emmett O'Keefe. You're all very welcome. Emmett, how are you?
Excellent. Looking forward to arguably probably the best sporting weekend of the year.
The Super Bowl, is that the reason that it's the best sporting weekend of the year? And the Six Nations, what is it that makes you so excited?
Yeah, it was a combination of the heavyweight clash in the Premier League with Liverpool and Man City, the Super Bowl, the Six Nations, and then we've a weekend of top-class racing, the Dublin Racing Festival as well.
Okay, good shout. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about the Super Bowl at the very end of this if anybody wants to get their card marked for it. Anything standing out for you particularly this weekend?
No, but again, like Emmett, it's the end of February, the start of February, and then around August, September time. That's generally when you get the best sporting weekends of the year. We've had loads of them this year, or last year, obviously, because everything was piled on top of each other. But as sporting weekends go, this is definitely one that you'll be sitting on the couch for.
Well, let me run you through the fixtures here, from starting with Villa against Arsenal at 12:30 on Saturday, 2 3 o'clock games. Classics: Burnley against Brighton, Newcastle against Southampton, and then Fulham versus West Ham is 5:30. But actually, Manchester United against Everton at 8:00 on Saturday is decent. On Sunday, it's Spurs versus West Brom in the early game at 12:00, Wolves against Leicester at 2:00, Liverpool versus Manchester City live at 4:30 on Off the Ball, and Sheffield United versus Newcastle at 5:15. The Monday night game is Leeds versus Crystal Palace, which should have some gold in it. We'll talk about that in a little while. Enda, you wanted to see if Manchester City win this weekend, is the league over? That was the Twitter poll that you put out to the good users of the Paddy Power Half Hour on the Off the Wall Twitter account. And the correct answer is yes. Did everybody get the right answer? Yes, they did. 72% of you. Well done. Congratulations. It's still only, I suppose it's a first, but it's a B. No, it's February. That's you being, telling the month. Well done, Enda. No, others are competing. That's you, the United fan. And they won't actually beat Liverpool this weekend. A tiny, tiny percent of the audience thinks that. So what's your rationale here, Enda? The league is over. We know it now.
Well, the league is over and done and dusted, and we can all put our feet up because Man City are going to beat Liverpool this weekend, so they'll go even further ahead with the game in hand. But, I mean, like, how many times this year have we had different contenders for the league? At one point in the season, Everton were going to be league champions, then Spurs were going to be league champions, then United were league contenders for a week. Liverpool were back for a while there, and now Man City are out and out favourites to wrap up the league in February. So this year is unpredictable, and that's my main point here. Man City, yes, fair enough, they're definitely in the driving seat now with that extra game and those 3 points cushion that they have on Manchester United. Reminder that Manchester United are second, not Liverpool here. The point that I make is you cannot predict anything this year. All it takes is Diaz to get injured for Man City, and they're done.
No,
so do not write off just anybody else winning the league.
Kill his mic for a few minutes there. Just cut him down so we can actually interject some intelligence. A modicum of sense to this conversation, Emmett. What the hell? The league is over. If Manchester City beat Liverpool this weekend, the league is over, because it's not just that they will crush Liverpool. There's no way that Manchester United can look at that and go, oh, that's okay, we can catch this team.
Jerry, you teed me up nicely there. We as a company strongly agree with you. And so on Sunday afternoon, we're actually going to pay out on Man City to win the league. I have to give a few T's and C's here. It's all singles, multis, and each way bets placed for Thursday, the 4th of February. No max stake restrictions, and apply to all online, mobile, retail, and text bets. So we're extremely confident that Man City are going to run away with the league, and that's why we're going to pay out on them. From our point of view, it's very hard to see anything beyond them, especially given they're close to an even money shot to beat Liverpool away from home this weekend, and there'll be odds on in every league game they play this season. I don't think it's a perfect City team, as Enda alluded to, with it didn't be a Diaz injury, and they don't have a true centre forward, and Raheem Sterling's probably playing a little bit below par. But most importantly, it's very, very hard to see Liverpool and Man United having the consistency to expose those weaknesses.
That's the main thing. I think the other part about it is that they've actually managed so far to deal with the injury to De Bruyne. Granted, it's been a few games, but there will be at some point where they get Aguero back. And even if Diaz does get injured, what's happened is that John Stones has emerged as somebody who is reliable and has improved. And so all of a sudden, the rising tide of having a... Pardon me?
He's improved beside Diaz.
Yeah, sure, but that doesn't... He's not a bad defender. Like, he has become a good defender, and I think that they could actually survive for a couple of weeks without Diaz. But it won't matter, because the lead that they're going to have, and it is so big, that it's done and dusted, and the money agrees. I didn't know that you guys were paying out. Is this earlier than you've ever paid out? Is this very early?
Yeah, it would be very early. We paid out, I think, around March time in the past, but the start of February would be close to as early as we ever paid out.
Right.
It's a bit like we probably paid it earlier, maybe Celtic to win the Scottish League, but rarely in the Premier League this early.
Well, that's fair enough. You could probably pay out in Rangers at this point. I think that's a safe enough bet too. Okay, so you don't think it's going to be over, I still don't buy any of that logic. So I hope you've got some better logic for some of the specials that we have this week. And you're actually coming off a win last week.
I am. So we had the Crystal Palace Wolves game again. We went for goals bets last week as opposed to anything else. And Crystal Palace Wolves, you can always count on them to be slow at scoring. So it was 0-0 at halftime. So that bet came through. I'll just ignore the Burnley one scoring in the first 15 minutes that we had as well. This week again, we're going for a sort of a goal scoring bet as well, because you can relatively predict when teams score generally at this stage of the season. So Man United playing Everton this weekend, obviously a big game. So I'm going for United to score in the first half and Everton score in the second half. So that's not United to win the first half and Everton to win the second. It's more just United score first half, Everton score second half. Emmett, what's that coming out as?
Yes, that's coming out at 5-2. Just on last week as well, it was a 7-4 winner for Enda for the 0-0 at halftime in the Wolves Palace.
That's not bad. So how is this a bet that you guys offer, one team score in one half and one team score in the other half? Or is this just both teams to score sexed up somehow?
It's actually, if you go on our website, we have a feature called Single Game Multi, where it's basically you can do it. It's like doing a kind of an accumulator on one match. So you can do corners, goals, and the match odds and it'll combine to give you one price. So you can it's a feature we offer on the website.
Okay.
We're actually offering a €5 risk-free bet on that feature for the Liverpool v Man City games. That might be worth a look for customers as well.
Okay, so Man United score in the first half, Everton score in the second half. Did you say it's coming out 5-2?
Yes.
Okay, I like the sound of this one, Enda. Then Manchester City to win under 2.5 goals. So you think it's going to be a tight game, a 1-0 or a 2-0?
Yeah, so again, you're looking at this specifically on their average across the season, and only around 30% of Man City's games this year have finished with over 2.5 goals, or they've only scored over 2.5 goals in 30% of their games. And then you're looking at both teams in terms of how many goals they concede on average in the game, and you've got a 9-10% chance of them conceding more than two. So I think there's going to be a low-scoring game. It's going to be edgy, and I think Man City will win this by, you know, maybe 2-0, but that's all you need. You just need less than three goals in this game for that to come out.
Yeah, so but a 2-1 and you're gone.
2-1 and I'm gone. If both teams score, then it's pretty much done.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay, you're essentially betting on Liverpool not to score.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting point, Emmett. So this bet that Enda wants to make, would he be better off making a bet Liverpool not to score?
It's basically Liverpool to win 1-0 or 2-0. But I think it's similar odds, because I think as Liverpool not to score, because City themselves are very likely to score. But I think, yeah, City coming off six clean sheets to bounce, and we've seen Liverpool's kind of struggles in front of goal. So I wouldn't put anyone off backing that at 9-2 on the site.
Okay, so 9-2, Man City to win under 2.5 goals. West Ham to finish top four. You are buying shares all day long in David Moyes. And now in Jesse Lingard. He's your favourite footballer, Andy. You've got Jesse Lingard pyjamas. We know that. What's the crack here?
Messi Lingard pyjamas, you know. That's who he is. He's back, Jer. He's back. He's going to find his form for West Ham. West Ham, unbelievably impressive this year. Like, you have to give David Moyes some serious credit here, because he took his own career and has just revitalized it at a club where it's a basket case. They've spent way too much money on useless talent and just haven't been able to bring it all together. David Moyes got rid of a lot of that talent that they bought in, spent a lot of money on, and he brought in some really, really good talented players. And one thing that's interesting about David Moyes, and it's something that we've touched on in the show a couple of times, is just the team behind David Moyes and how they all come together, and you get this West Ham side. David Moyes had a really good scouting network at Everton, and that's why they always managed to punch above their weight in terms of their finishes in the league. And we could see a transition to that with West Ham now, because it didn't happen at Manchester United because it's a completely different situation. But at West Ham, similar club, similar objective to Everton, so you can get in the same type of players to do that job. And the signings that they've made with side Benrahma, he's starting to really kick into his form now that he had for Brentford last year. Thomas Suchek, arguably one of the best signings of the year so far. And then Kufal, his Czech teammate as well, coming in at right back. Some really good players coming in there, with add that to Jared Bowen, and with Mikel Antonio playing off front. West Ham are serious contenders for at least top five this year, if not top four.
What are the odds?
Yeah, so we've West Ham at 9-4 for top four. I think they'll fall short of that, but I would echo Enda's sentiments. And I think it's just worth pointing out that, as well as being a brilliant recruiter, Moyes has an ability to manufacture centre forwards. We've seen that with Marwan Fellaini switching position from midfield centre forward at Everton. Marko Arnautovic, in his first spell at West Ham, moved from the wing to striker with quite good effect. I think Mikel Antonio has moved between kind of wing back on the wing, and he's really thrived under Moyes as a kind of full time striker.
Yeah, look, I think it's hard not to be anything other than unbelievably impressed by West Ham. You do have a Jesse Lingard point here as well you want to make?
The best stat of the year by far and away is the fact that Jesse Lingard now has more goals than Kai Havertz, who came in for massive money to Chelsea this year. Jesse Lingard, 2 goals already this season. What are the odds on him to finish with more goals than Kai Havertz at the end of the year, Emmett?
I find this a very tough one to price, because I'm not sure how much game time Havertz will get, especially if Chelsea stick with their current system. He's competing with Christian Pulisic, Hakim Ziyech, Callum Hudson-Odoi, all for game time, are all excellent players. So, and whereas I think Lingard will probably start every week. So, and Lingard also has a 1-goal advantage. Lingard scored 2 goals this season, Havertz only scored 1. So I'm as short as 6-5 and Lingard score more goals than Havertz.
I mean, it's unbelievable, isn't it? Yeah. At the start of the season.
Crazy.
What would you have got at the start of the season?
I'd say 14-1 or something, maybe bigger.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, look, we didn't know where Jesse Lingard was going to get any game time at that point. So, okay, all those available on the Paddy Power website. You can check out the off-the-ball specials, and hopefully Enda has picked some winners for you there. Let's get into these fixtures. Aston Villa against Everton, first game of the weekend. We asked you on Instagram what you thought was going to happen on this one, and it is 58% Villa, 42% Arsenal. So I'm not sure everybody's been paying attention just recently. Villa looked like they had an excellent defence for ages. The COVID hit, and since then they've been conceding goals for fun. So I'm actually quite worried about the impact of COVID, and also just the fact that it's quite a bare squad they have. So I don't think Villa are going to have as strong a second half of the season as they had in the first half. And I thought Arsenal had turned a corner just recently, until a few moments of madness and the red cards the other night. So I'm taking those out. I'm saying that I think that what we're going to see is an uptick in performance from Arsenal. That's a short-term wobble, and I'm worried as a Villa fan. Emmett, I definitely wouldn't be making Villa favourite for this, but I guess you...
Yeah, so
go on.
Yeah, sorry, Arsenal slide favourites here. So Aston Villa 17-10, the draw 12-5, and Arsenal 6-4. Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think Villa probably have a little bit of a hangover from the Burnley game, where they absolutely dominated and should never lost that game 3-2. But I think, just if you're backing Arsenal this weekend, I would agree with you that Arsenal have been playing very well and were unfortunate to lose to Wolves. But what's worth watching is to see who starts in goals. Bert Leno will be absent through suspension. Matty Ryan looks like he's going to be injured. So Runarsson might get the start in goal. Some of the Icelandic keepers' early season displays were of the comedic variety and prompted Arsenal to sign Ryan in January. Some of the listeners might remember Roberto Jimenez, West Ham's backup keeper, who provided a bit of comic relief last season to all bar West Ham fans. And I wouldn't be shocked if Runarsson has a similarly negative effect. I think that makes probably Arsenal a little bit of a dangerous betting proposition this weekend.
Okay, that is the top quality information that people tune into every Friday afternoon here for. Do you want to move on, Ender? Have you got anything you want to say about that?
No, I don't think so. Matty Ryan, I just want to say that, like, that's a brilliant signing for Arsenal. I thought it was very weird that he kind of fell out of favour at Brighton. I thought he's been one of the best keepers in the Premier League over the last couple of years. So when he is fit, he'll be an excellent backup at least.
Okay, so Brighton versus Burnley. Burnley versus Brighton is next.
Yeah, so Sean Dyche, I don't know if you saw his press conference, Jared, but he definitely won the press conference of the year during the week. Unfortunately, his side couldn't match that with their performance because they were absolutely useless during the week. And Brighton have turned it around again. Trust the process, Jared. Trust the process. Brighton will come good.
Eat that humble pie in there. Bit of that humble pie. Yum.
Yeah, that's it. This game, fairly straightforward. Again, not one that you're going to be sitting down on your 3 o'clock to watch. But if you're going to have a bet on it, I would be looking at both teams to score not happening in this, because in Brighton's last five games, only one of them have had both teams to score. And again, with Brighton, with Brighton, they have gone three games without defeat. And they've kept three clean sheets in the last five games. And again, overall, across Burnley's 20 games this season, only five of them have ended with both teams to score. So with all that in mind, I would be going with either both teams to score no by itself or Brighton to win to nil.
Okay, what kind of price is both teams to score no?
You've got... Sorry, one second.
No worries. Nice of Ender to put you on the spot there.
No worries at all. Both teams score 3-4. Yeah, I wouldn't put anyone off backing that. And so the match prices are Burnley 13-5, the draw 2-1, and Brighton 23-20. Yeah, just to back up what Ender said, I think this is a Burnley team that are really struggling both in defence and attack. They're the second worst expected goals in the league, and only Brighton only West Brom have scored. Only West Brom were worse in that statistic, and they now have scored the least goals in the league. They're behind Sheffield United, so I think if you're looking for a team that could slip into the relegation mire, Burnley certainly fit that profile.
Yeah, at the same time, I think they've played some good teams in the games that they've struggled recently, and maybe I'm biased because of the Villa game. I think that this could be a draw. Newcastle against Southampton is next. So Newcastle 41%, Southampton 59%. Are people not watching what's going on with Southampton at the moment? Their form has completely deserted. Remember, they beat Liverpool 1-0, and it feels like it was about a week ago. It isn't just a week ago. It's four full games since then, and they've lost them all. I did also confidently predict this time last week that the end was nigh for Steve Bruce, and then sure look, didn't they turn it around? I don't know. I actually don't have a clue what's going to happen here. I absolutely feel like Southampton need to start getting something going quickly, or all of that good work that Hasenhüttl had done, all his reputation, the air will come out of that. And I don't know. How do you price up this?
Yeah, so we've got Newcastle at 2-1, the draw 11-5, and Southampton are 7-5. Just when you thought Steve Bruce was out, he pulls you back in. Newcastle have actually played quite well their last three games since switching to a midfield diamond, and were unfortunate to lose to Palace in midweek. And Southampton, I think, could be missing half a team here, with Vestergaard, Romeo, Theo Walcott, and Walker Peters all potentially absent with injury, and Jan Bednarek suspended. So I think Newcastle actually, one of the first times I've said this all season, I think Newcastle potentially look a decent bet here, 2-1.
Right, there's a bit of value there. Okay, Fulham against West Ham, and the next.
Yeah, so the aforementioned West Ham, obviously in great form, Jair, and Fulham, absolutely not in great form. They've improved a little bit, but again, they're still relegation candidates, probably going to go down this year. And with West Ham's form, they're unbeaten in three games, and the way that they're playing football and the way that they're attacking sides, I think this is going to be a relatively straightforward game for West Ham. They've been pretty good away, averaging almost 2 points a game away from home. Fulham are barely averaging a point a game at home at the minute. Craven Cottage, obviously, going under construction this year, and it's not really the fortress that you would remember from the Fulham side of the mid-2000s. It's a beautiful place to watch football, I will put that, but it's not a great place for Fulham to play football at the minute. So I think this is going to be a straightforward one for West Ham. Probably going to be a high enough scoring game, but it looks for the averages between these two teams, so I'd probably go West Ham over 2.5 here.
Okay, I can hear the logic. Emmett, how would that work out?
Yeah, so we've that we'll come in around 5-2 I echo Enda's sentiments here. It's hard to see past the West Ham win. Just if customers look for an alternative to that, we were 13-2 by Tomáš Souček to score a header. And he ruled the skies, and West Ham were the best team in terms of scoring from attacking set pieces this season. So that might be worth a look also.
Okay, let's move on. One of the games of the weekend, Manchester United against Everton. It is on Saturday evening. It is hard to make out there. 73% in the turquoise for Manchester United on Instagram, 27% for Everton. These are the games that you really want to see a manager of the experience that we have in charge of Everton at the moment being able to grind out a result and catapult them from those clubs in the 6th to 12th bracket to a team who is like 5th-ish, and maybe if they could put a run together, they might finish 4th. But I'm just not sure that Everton are at that stage just yet, Enda, and so I'm not confident in predicting that Everton are going to be able to get a draw here.
Yeah, it's been one of the frustrations for me over the last couple of years with Everton and their managers, and you just wonder what they're trying to be. Like, are they trying to do what Tottenham did with Pochettino and break that top four? And they just don't seem to be able to get the right manager or right recruitment in to pull it all together enough to break the top four. And I think it's gotten to the stage now where that's probably their holy grail. Like, they're chasing that so hard that maybe that the pressure of that is too much, and that's where they're falling down. But to me, it just seems like they don't bring in players who consistently perform to the levels that you need that for. Like, Richarlison, clearly an exceptional talent, but he has 6 to 7 games in a season where he'll do nothing. Likewise for the likes of Calvert-Lewin, who has sharpened up a little bit this year. But they've got these players in the sides who, on their day, are top four contenders, but they've got too many streaky players in their side at the minute. And maybe Carlo Ancelotti wants to get that out. He's talked a lot about mentality, and maybe that's where they're falling down. But I just think that is where they've fallen down over the last couple of years. They need to get more consistent standout players like Allen, who always plays to a certain level. You know you're getting a 6 to 7 out of 10 performance to him, regardless of whether he plays well, according to just well for his talent. So that's where I think they're falling down.
Okay. I presume Manchester United are quite strong favourites for this, Emmett?
Yeah, so Man United are 1-2, the draw 16-5, and Everton 5-1. Just Enda's points on inconsistent Everton players. James was an unused sub against Leeds, and after 3 goals and 3 assists in his first 5 league games, he's 1 goal and 0 assists in his last 8 matches. And as has been mentioned before, James is going to give you very little in terms of running without the ball or defensive effort. I love watching him, so hopefully he can bounce back and doesn't have a career that's a bit like Ilhan of Man City.
But that's bang on. That's exactly what you would have expected from James. If someone said at the end of the season, James started great and then faded immediately, you'd be like, well, I mean, wow. Who could have predicted that that was exactly what was going to happen? That's a price bigger than 3-1 about the draw. Suddenly, I mean, you know, it's obviously priced accordingly, but if Manchester United aren't going to win, I don't think Everton are going to win this game. So, okay, let's move on. Spurs versus West Brom. Not a whole heap to talk about here. Spurs 74%, West Brom, Big Sam 26%. I just can't get behind West Brom, even irrespective of how badly Spurs are playing at the moment. I feel like this is a get-right game for Spurs, and I think that this might be one of those things that you could put in your accumulator, Emmett.
I couldn't agree, to be honest, because how bad Spurs have been and since Harry Kane has been absent. So the match price are Tottenham 2-5, the draw 10-3, and West Brom 13-2. Spurs have 1 expected goal combined their last 3 matches, and I think we're starting to see that Harry Kane dropping deep and creating was Mourinho's only attacking trick, and I think they need him back desperately. As poor as West Brom are, they are at least scoring goals and have had some good results away from home, drawing with Man City and Liverpool and beating Wolves and Molineux. So I think Wolves win or draw, double chance at 7-4. So you'd win the bet if West Brom win or draw. I think that looks appealing to me.
Okay, all right. That's why we've got markets. Next up is Wolves against Leicester, Enda.
Yeah, so this would have been like a top 6 sort of fixture last year, but Wolves have obviously fallen off a cliff this year. And again, sort of like the Spurs-West Brom game, there's not a lot to talk about here. There's Leicester disappointed against Leeds, but got back to winning form. Again, Jamie Vardy, he's not fully fit. You're not getting the full Leicester package. So that's our key issue. And again, defensively, they're not as strong as the other contenders for top 4. So that's where Leicester are falling down. they won't have to worry about that too much, Wolves, because Wolves don't score that many goals. They don't create that many chances, and they don't score early either. So I think Leicester could have this game put to bed by halftime.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell's happened to Wolves, to be honest. It doesn't, I mean, obviously, you know, key player goes down, but were they a one-man team? I'm not sure.
They were, Jared. Their first games this year, I think, Raul Jimenez, they had scored 10 or 11 goals. Raul Jimenez had scored 8 of those. So that's how reliant they were on him, and that's the damage of what relying on that one striker up front does to you. That's why teams like Liverpool have now changed the system where they've got two wingers and midfielders coming up, and their striker is not their key man.
Yeah, all right. Emmett, say anything about this?
Yeah, no, so the match prices are Wolves 12-5, the draw 23-10, and Leicester 11-10. Yeah, just to back up Linda's end of saying, the Wolves approach was completely one-dimensional. They don't really have midfielders attacking. It was all about wing-backs getting forward and getting the ball into Jimenez, and they've been exposed since he was absent. Some recruitment hasn't helped. As I kind of mentioned before, Nelson Semedo's been awful coming in for Matt Doherty, and hard to see beyond Leicester here.
Okay, the big game of the weekend is next on our slate here. It's Liverpool against Manchester City. How does this, a 48%, it's not actually 48%, it's 40% are back in Liverpool on our Instagram poll, 60% back in Manchester City. Are Man City favourites?
Yeah, absolutely. So Man City have shortened up significantly in the last week. It's now Liverpool 9-4, the draw 13-5, and Man City 11-10.
What were they week ago?
So they were 6-4 a week, 6-4 between a week and 2 weeks ago.
Okay, and look, that obviously makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, before the Brighton game, presumably, who was favourites before the Brighton game?
I don't know. Man City would still have been favourites. Man City's figures would still be significantly better than Liverpool's. But I think as well, but what is in Liverpool's favour is that obviously their poor results have came against the teams that have sat deep and frustrated them. And even though City are more solid than in years past, they will give Liverpool a chance to kind of press them out the pitch and make turnovers their centre halves.
Yeah, I actually have no idea what's going to happen here, and there's just been that level of inconsistency from Liverpool over the last while. You thought that the two games against West Ham and against Spurs, that it looked like we were starting to see, and just the absolute joy of Klopp in the aftermath of those matches, that, oh, my team is back, I've got them back, let's go slash our way across Europe in this Premier League and let's see what happens, let's see what you're made of, Man City. And then Brighton rolled into town, is like, well, they're tired, I'm not going to make excuses, and then he makes loads of excuses. I don't know. I actually, like, did they obviously get up for this game because it's Manchester City and they realise that, you know, they've been brilliant in these matches over the last couple of years. Like, they've been absolutely brilliant in these matches over the last couple of years. So, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, these have been the best games of the last 5-6 years. And I think the fans being in the stadium play a big role in that as well, because Anfield on that Champions League night, for example, where it was absolutely electric. And you just think that adds to it. And Liverpool coming out of the gates early and knowing that they can kill a side in the first 15 minutes, you just don't get that with them this year. And I think one thing that the Klopp stuff was interesting after that Brighton game, because he said they're mentally fatigued and they're not right in that sense to win the title. Are we starting to see now this actually creeping in, that maybe Liverpool are buying into the whole fact that this is the end of the road for this Klopp Liverpool side and this is burnout from the last two seasons? There is potential there, but I don't know. I think the performances haven't been that bad when Liverpool are losing. They just need to take those chances. They've been creating loads of chances and getting into the opposition box. But I think against Man City, unless Pep throws a spanner into the works with his team sheet, all he has to do is get his side in the same shape that they've been in the last 6-7 weeks, and they'll win this game.
It's an interesting point, Enda. I mean, look, if we've seen in big games he gets in his own head, particularly in Europe over the last while, I don't expect that to happen. I expect him to try and go for it and kill the title, kill their opposition, stab them now and get rid of them and let the bloody corpse bleed out in front of everybody, and you go, yeah, come on.
But you see, the problem with them is that they don't have that killer instinct in them this year, although they're playing quite well. I was watching Gabriel Jesus. If he could finish like Aguero, than they would be the City side of 2 years ago or 3 years ago. They would be more than 10 points ahead in the Premier League right now if he could finish the same way as Aguero does, but he can't. And neither can Sterling and Bernardo Silva and Mahrez. None of these players, they're all great and all good in individual situations, but they are not as killer as the City side of a couple of years ago, the one that won the league. So I do think the City will win this, but I don't think it'll be of a high scoring in a high scoring manner. It's going to be a strong professional City win.
At those prices, at those prices, Emmett, do you see a lot of support for Liverpool?
I think we, in terms of our kind of our book in the game, I think Liverpool would definitely be a bigger kind of loser for us than City, given I think Liverpool are probably more fans out there and they are the bigger price selection. And as has been mentioned, Anfield has been the kind of City's field of nightmares in the league and Champions League, with like four defeats out of five. The best result they've got is a 0-0 draw a couple of seasons ago. I'd agree with Enda. I think it's hard to see beyond a kind of a cagey affair. I think City would happily take a draw here. In terms of anyone looking for a bet for the game,
go for it.
I think Thiago is worth a look for a card. He's 2.6 fouls per game since he joined Liverpool. To put that in context, Ashley Barnes leads the league for players who've played more than 10 matches with 2.5 fouls a game, so he's more than him. And you should get probably about 5-2 for him to be carded. We should have that market on side shortly.
Okay. Two quick games for you to round out the Paddy Power half hour this week. Sheffield United against Chelsea. What's it here? Blades 21%, Blues 79%. That's what the Instagram poll is coming up with. The Tuchel revolution has kicked off after that first game where, you know, everybody said he's under pressure, the clock is ticking, all the English hacks were rounding against him. Well, it turns out he knows a thing or two about organising football teams. I feel bad for Sheffield United that they've gone on their recent run of form, but they're going to run into a Chelsea side, I think, who are improving and who are going to win this game. And that's like, I actually would love to see Sheffield United recover from the position they've been in, you know, notwithstanding the fact that they've got a bunch of Irish players on the team. I presume Chelsea are quite strong favourites for this and that you're starting to price in the Tuchel bounce.
100%. So yeah, I think Sheffield United are 6-1, the draw 7-2, and Chelsea are 4-9. I think if Frank Lampard was still in charge, Chelsea could be as big as maybe 8-11 here. 8-11, 4-6 anyway. I've been very impressed with them so far. I think moving to a back three is clearly hugely beneficial for Cesar Azpilicueta and Marcus Alonso. Azpilicueta is only a mediocre fullback because he doesn't have the explosiveness to get forward, but he's outstanding as a kind of a hybrid fullback centre back who can hold a back three together. It's actually a role I think Seamus Coleman could do for Ireland. And then Marcus Alonso, again, doesn't quite have the explosiveness to get up and down as a fullback, but when played high up the pitch, he can really get in the box and affect the game with his power and strength. And it's been great to see also Callum Hudson-Odoi play so well. I think some of the listeners might have been at an Arsenal v Chelsea friendly in Dublin 2018. I was blown away by his talent there. He ruptured his Achilles tendon in 2019 and has probably taken a bit of time to recover from that. But he even mentioned recently in the Chelsea website how he's sort of appreciated the detailed instruction that Tuchel is providing, which I think was probably lacking under Frank Lampard.
Ah, poor Callum Hudson-Odoi ripping it. Poor Frank Lampard, rather, getting ripped by Callum Hudson-Odoi on the Chelsea website with just the little details. What do you think, Enda?
Yeah, I think this is going to be an easy win for Chelsea, passing around them, and Sheffield United's press isn't as good as it was last year. So it's really surprising, Jair, isn't it, that a manager of the tactical nous of Thomas Tuchel has managed to come in and thrive in the Premier League, because it's, you know, everyone knows it's the best league in the world, isn't it?
I mean, it is, Enda. I realise that, you know, I know what you're doing, but actually it definitely is the best league in the world. I mean, 100% right now it is by far the best league in the world. Like,
definitely.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous that you keep banging on about this, by the way. We'll come back to this next week and you can give us 20 reasons why other leagues, Ligue 1, it's got all those good up-and-coming French footballers.
I think my key point would be that there's a reason the Premier League is the best league in the world, and it has a lot to do with managers like Thomas Tuchel, like Jurgen Klopp, like Pep Guardiola, all coming in from other leagues.
Leeds versus Crystal Palace, finally.
Leeds versus Crystal Palace. So, yeah, look, Leeds are a mid-table side, but again, this is what I always take the option to watch Leeds, because they will score really good goals and they just smash the ball into the net. The problem with them at the minute, and especially playing at home, is they've just got a new surface in the pitch. See some kinks of that being worked out during the week. I think Mark Lawrenson described it as it looking like it was treated with olive oil when it was growing up. So it's a good surface, very slick, but they're still getting used to playing on it. So I think, look, Crystal Palace, they're not a side that'll score many goals. They won't threaten Leeds all that much on the counter attack. So I do think that this should be a fairly straightforward win for Leeds. And if they score early, like Crystal Palace do concede a lot of goals early, then I think this could be an easy enough win for them.
I don't know. I think this could be one of those wild games that we're seeing a lot of this Monday night under lights as well. So Emmett, what does the money say?
Yeah, so Leeds 17-20, the draw 13-5, and Palace 3-1. We've actually seen Leeds really struggle this season against the really good counter-attacking teams. So we see Man United put a big score on them. Leicester beat them 4-1. Palace, with earlier in the season, with Eze and Zaha, ripped them apart. And the key here is that it looks like Zaha may be absent. I mentioned before on this podcast how important Zaha is to Palace. Like, he's a top four player playing a kind of a lower mid table team. And if he doesn't play, I think it gives a huge edge to Leeds. And I could see them win comfortably.
Okay, it's Super Bowl weekend. You mentioned that straight off the bat here. What look, I find it very difficult to make any case for anything other than Patrick Mahomes being MVP and winning here, but what is the money saying at this stage?
Yeah, so in terms of the match prices, Kansas City are 8-13, and Tampa Bay are 11-8. It's a 3-point spread, so Kansas City are minus 3 in the spread. In terms of looking for a bet for the game, I agree with you. If the Chiefs win, it's very likely that the Mahomes will win the MVP. But I see the Super Bowl as quite similar to last year, where the 49ers got so close to winning. And if the 49ers had won that Super Bowl, I think it was possibly likely that their pass rusher Nick Bosa would have won the Super Bowl, because he'd such an impact on affecting Mahomes' throws. And similarly for the Bucks, I think Shaquille Barrett at 33-1 is worth a look for a small bet for MVP. Kansas City are missing their first choice offensive tackle. I think if Tampa Bay are to win, him and Jason Pierre-Paul have to play well.
I absolutely buy the logic. I just know as well that it's the TV executives who will want to talk to Tom Brady as MVP. If Tom Brady throws 6 picks and they win the game, I think that they'll still find some way to give him the MVP, because he's Tom Brady and the celebrity quotient. So you've got to factor that into the price and the value you're getting as well.
100%. I remember I backed James White a couple of years ago at halftime at 100-1 in the when they came back into the Falcons, and was truly, and he scored, I think, three touchdowns second half, and still didn't get it. So yeah, I'm well aware of that.
There's no each way for that, is there? There's no, like, should have got moral.
No, and you're right. It's old middle-aged white sports writers voting for this. I think they're probably not that likely to vote for a defensive lineman. But I could see a scenario where Brady throws maybe 2 interceptions, but Tampa Bay still win because their defense plays so well. So that would be the scenario you'd probably need for Barrett to win the MVP.
Yeah, and look, maybe they get to Mahomes early and he gets injured and they win the game, and it's because of the pass rush that ends up happening. So that's the type of thing that'll give you an interest in that. Anything else in terms of the bets for the Super Bowl this weekend that people might be interested in?
Yeah, I think Cameron Brate would be worth a look in terms of an anytime touchdown score, 12-5. He's Tampa Bay tight end. Just, we've seen Rob Gronkowski, who's usually the Bucs' main tight end, be more of a blocker, try to protect Brady, and Brate has been featured more in the passing attack. The Chiefs have been quite poor defending tight ends all season, so I think Brate be worth a look here.
Okay, and Brate missed practice yesterday. I haven't seen what the report has been. There were just an abundance of caution was what they said about him, so just make sure he's actually lining up and playing and fully fit to go. And any of the rest of those guys, like Antonio Brown, also injured in the build-up, but if he plays, you would expect Brady to be looking for him?
Absolutely. I think as well the way the Chiefs play defensively, in terms of they blitz so much and put pressure on the quarterback so quickly, that you're relying on the receivers to get open quickly, and Chris Godwin and Antonio Brown do that really well. So I think Godwin and Brown will have to be featured heavily if the Bucs are to win.
I'm sorry, just give me the match odds again. What's the price on the Kansas City Chiefs winning?
8-13 in the Kansas City Chiefs winning, and 11-8 in the Buccaneers.
All right. Okay. Good stuff. We'll enjoy the greatest sporting weekend of the year so far, Emmett. And good stuff. Thanks a million.
The Paddy Power Half Hour on OTB Sports. Minimal contact in stadiums. That shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down. Gamble responsibly. GamblingCare.ie. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.